Hi, everyone. If you missed our first announcement, tonight is the Conk, and it's a true live storytelling event, and stories are told by anyone in the audience. Every month we have a theme, and this month's theme is Why I Live Where I Live, so kind of an homage to the Harry Cruz essay. So, if you have a story about why you live where you live, and I'm guessing that is likely Gainesville, come up and share with us. All right, wow. While you're getting up your guts to tell a story, I'll let you know that The Conk is put on by Grow Radio. It's your local internet radio station. You can check it out at growradio.org. Also, Satchels and Lightning Salvage has been hosting us for the past 2 years now, so we like to thank them again and again for letting this happen. For letting this happen here. Well, we're off to a great start.
How long is it? 5 minutes?
Yeah, 5 minutes.
Because I could talk a long time.
Well, it seems like nobody else wants to tell stories, so go on for as long as you want.
All right. Hey, Fred. Okay, my name is John Krigbaum. Some of you may know me. I've lived in Gainesville for 14 years. I come from New Haven, Connecticut. And what I was thinking of when I thought about this topic, and, you know, I'm shy. I was thinking about, you know, I don't want to go biographical on you guys, you know. I'll just tell a story. But then I realized it's necessarily biographical because we are who we are and we live where we live, and that's what this theme is about. So that's what I'm going to talk about today, and the contingencies of life. So I guess it starts when I, you know, was born, and I lived in a happy nuclear family until about 1977 when that broke up. And I hung with my mother and moved to Massachusetts and continued to do my things in my formative years, and still tried to maintain touch with my dad, and things are good. But while I was in high school, you know, I was tend to be in the moment, so I was off doing my things in high school, and then I went to college, and I went off doing my things in college, and I ended up getting a degree and then going off into grad school because I didn't know what I wanted to do with life. So I moved to New York City, and I lived there for 14 years. So that's just me being biographical in a general sense. So I guess in terms of the contingencies of life, I got, you know, certainly you're doing your professional thing, but there's distractions all the time. And I ended up falling in love with this Sarah Silverman-like woman who liked Elvis Costello, and I liked Elvis Costello, so it was like, she's got to be the one. And it really didn't turn out that way. We had a great time. She was a patent lawyer and made beaucoup of money. So we were able to have a good time in New York City, but we weren't a good match. So as life moves on, you figure shit out and you move on and you decide that you need to maybe make a change. As much as I love New York City, I didn't want to go. I didn't want to leave, but I realized maybe New York City wasn't a good place for me, or was not feasible to get a job in my little academic world that I work in. So it took me a long time to get my PhD. I'll just leave it at that. But when the job market started to knock on my door and I started to get on the interview circuit and figure out what it was I was going to get a job in or where. In academia, you kind of go to where the jobs are, and that could be a dumb, boring story that I got here to Gainesville because of that, but that's not what this is about. So my mentor was pretty adamant. He had a position on this, and I wanted to move to L.A. because I was thinking, why not live in L.A.? It's kind of like New York, and I could move along to there. And so I really wanted to get this UCLA job, and I got an offer for a visiting professorship kind of thing. And then I also had an offer for, and this was while I was still married, I should tell you. So this, you know, seemingly, the marriage seemed to be like, maybe that might work. Then I got a job offer in like remote rural Long Island. That didn't really appeal. So my wife at the time was always saying, I don't want to leave New York. I want to stay urban. I want to, you know, do all that kind of thing. And, you know, my mentor at the time sort of took me into his office, shut the door, and he never shut the door. And he said, you will take that job in Gainesville, Florida. And I was like, please, Terry, right. You know, I'm not going to, why would I listen to you? And then I left, but he was quite serious. He had me in mind, and he was like, this is the job for you, and you should take it. So I was like, all right, I'll take it. And so I didn't say it then, but I, like, after a week of mulling, I decided to take it. And this against the fact that my wife wanted me to stay urban and maybe near New York rather than far away. So I moved here, and needless to say, long story short, the marriage went south. I went south. Marriage went south. And then I ended up getting the real job, the permanent job, and things kind of worked out here. So the weird thing is, so I'm an anthropologist, and I was thinking about this, why I live where I live, and certainly that's grounded in where we live physically. So I live at a bungalow at 619, you know, Northeast 10th Avenue, and that's where I live. And that house has made me very happy, and I love it. And it's, you know, it's not an unhealthy love. It's a good place. And I remember being on a plane with my friend, and she's said, oh, yeah, my friend's neighbor's selling a house. You should check it out. And so when I got back, when I knew I had the job and I needed a house, I decided to look this woman up. Her name was Malia. She was totally cool. And she and I fell in love with this house. And the house has great bones, and it has a wonderful vibe to it. And so I ended up buying the house. And in one day in June, I got a divorce, and the marriage was over. The next day in June, I actually signed the papers for a house in Gainesville. And then the next day in June, so this was June 4th, 5th, and 6th, 2001. The next day, I flew up to New York after signing the papers for the house. And the next day, I defended my dissertation. And so I was like, wow, these are three major life changes that have occurred in the blink of an eye. And yet, here I am in New York City, not living here anymore. I just bought a house, and yet I don't know. It was ironic, but kind of cathartic as well, to sort of lay out the next phase of my life. So I ended up buying this house, and one of the things when we ended up later that summer moving in, and I was a single at that time, I was moving into the house, and one of the strange things that I found on the counter, that she let me come in and go, you know, come and go as she was still kind of getting her stuff moved out. And I should say, when I first met her, she was cool, and she had longish hair, and she showed me the house, and we bonded and took tours through the potato vine and you know, pushed away the banana spiders and things like that. But when I knew I wanted to buy the house 3 or 4 days later, or, you know, I couldn't find her and I couldn't reach her for 3 or 4 more days. And when she came back and I tracked her down, it was her hair was bald because of the energy. I guess she was in a meditation thing, so she had shaved her head and all that stuff, which is cool. That's fine. It's all good. But I, so what happened next was I'm moving into this house a few months later, and I was coming and going with some things, and I found this piece of note of things to do list on the counter. And, you know, there was like, you know, put out the garbage and clean out the garage and things like that. But then the last thing on the list kind of, I mean, it didn't disturb me, but it was odd. And what it said was bury stuff. So somehow this, and she's a dear person and a great friend of mine, but she wanted to bury stuff on the property before I moved in. And that was like on her to-do list, which I still have to this day. So, I mean, I've never, because she never, well, no, maybe I don't have the berry stuff list. I have something else she gave me, which said, may all your dreams come true, basically, in this house that is yours. So it was a beautiful sentiment from Zen Creations, and I really love her for that, and for, you know, finding me the place where I live. Now, that's my story in a nutshell, but I'll just say one more thing about it, because I do not do social networking or Facebook much. I'm on it, but I never really click things and check things out, and I happened to today, and I happened to click the conch post that Bill had sent out, and I happened to click on Sherilyn Sweeney's little like, because she liked it, and she was going to go, and then there was, oh no, maybe there was something else, but then Rick Stick Green had liked what she said or something like that. And so what it did was it got me to this image on my head, because I'm looking at this great profile picture of this guy on the top of Mount Katahdin saying, I'm in Miami, bitch. And it's from Katahdin. And I don't know if you know this, but Katahdin is it's the first piece of North America that meets sunlight as the sun comes up in the east. So that's always been a very favorite spot of mine, is Mount Katahdin. And I used to hike there with my dad all the time. And it's one of the things that my dad and I share to this day, is we've always kept this picture of us up at the top of Mount Katahdin. And I love my dad, and he's sort of going through cognitive decline and that sort of thing. So he has wonderful memories, and we still connect, but it's something that I cherish in terms of the memories. And so Katahdin is like special. It's a beautiful spot. And you're welcome to come and look at this picture. But I'll just leave it at that, because I think where we are is obviously a factor of a lot of contingencies, and there are even more contingencies that I'm not sort of telling you about today, but I'll leave it at that. And the randomness of me happening to click on a friend's like, just to see to meet someone I haven't met and to connect with a picture about my life and growing up and the love I have for my family and friends, is great. So thank you.
Thank you. And now Justine.
I don't want to stand in front of that stupid light, so you have to pardon me. I'm going to be over here. 2 years ago, about 2.5 years ago, when I came to Gainesville, I was freshly single. And 2.5 years later, I'm still single, but more like bitterly, frustratedly, angrily, and depressingly single. Do I have to finish a stupid story now? I'm just not into it. All right, so what happened was, just to set the stage, I had come back from South Korea, and I had had cancer in South Korea. From there, I'd gone to Chile and found out we were working as illegal immigrants and had to escape Chile. So I came back to America, and it was a nightmare of anxiety and panic and fatigue and ill health. And it was 6 months before I even felt like a human again. Shortly after I started to feel like a human again, we decided to split up. So my ex went off to Abu Dhabi and decided not to pay for a house and foreclose and file bankruptcy. So cancer, escaping Chile as an illegal immigrant, bankruptcy and foreclosure and divorce, it's was not a good time. So I was leaning a little bit on alcohol and other such things. And I began to realize that I really had nowhere to go. And I was living in Akron, Ohio. Yeah, thank you. If you've ever been there, don't bother. And I was living in like the ghetto part of Akron, Ohio, in a foreclosing house. And I was working as a housekeeper, which is really a bummer because actually I'm a really highly trained artist. I have a website, barefootjustine.com. A lot of my art's up there if you want to see it. It's free. Anyway, so the fact that I was working as a housekeeper in the ghetto in a depressing foreclosing home, single, was really weighing on me. And one of my clients announced, we're moving to Florida. And so I said, gee, can I go with you? Just as a joke. And they said, oh yeah, sure, we need a live-in housekeeper. So I came back the next week and I said, are you serious? Do you really need a live-in housekeeper? And she said, yes, we do, because my husband's sick and I have to stay here to, you know, until I can find a job in Florida. They were going to Ocala. Yeah, I heard that out there. It didn't work for me. And but I didn't know where I was going. All I knew was I was getting out of my foreclosing house, leaving the divorce behind, et cetera, and heading to Ocala, Florida with a couple I didn't even know. So I packed up everything, no shoes, actually. I decided to walk away. So I haven't worn shoes since I moved here. So anyway, I got in the car and headed off to Ocala, Florida. Well, I got down here and realized that the people I was traveling with were batshit crazy. They were just not right. And things slowly kept getting worse and worse and worse. And they were forming this weird cabal to drive me crazy. And they put me in this room with nothing to live on but an inflatable bed that was slowly deflating. They had another inflatable bed, but they said I wasn't allowed to use it because that was for guests. And I had nowhere to go. And what I had done was, before I left Akron, I sold my car. So I put money into an envelope to buy a car when I got here. I sold my guitars. I sold whatever I could. And I put money in envelopes. And I had enough money to get by for a week for like 3 months. So I had 3 months worth of envelopes, like 12 envelopes. So I had 3 months to get it together and find a job and find a place to live with no friends, no clues, and no connections. I landed at Ocala and realized very quickly that Ocala was not going to work for me either. Not only were these people crazy, but I was in the wrong town. And I was totally in the wrong town. And if you're from Ocala, I'm sorry. I'm not sorry I'm saying all this. I'm sorry you're from Ocala. I just wanted to be clear on that. So anyway, I was thinking, I was down to like four envelopes. I had $400 left. And I had no clue what I was going to do or where I was going to go. I didn't have a home to go to in Akron. My family doesn't really speak to me. So I was alone down here. And I walked to the University of Ocala, a little college there, and this woman jumped up from behind the counter and she said, oh my God, where the hell did you come from? Run. You know, just like, and she didn't mean it in a mean way. She meant, get out of this town. You don't belong here. None of us do, you know? So I thought, wow, you know, now what? You know, I've got 4 weeks worth of money, no job, no clue, and I'm in the wrong town. So I'm probably over 5 minutes, but I think that's okay. So anyway, from that point forward, I started thinking, well, what do you do? So I went to the copy shop because I was getting art copied to try and get some students in Ocala or something just to get my money going because I also teach art. And I talked to the guy behind the counter once before, And so he was like my only friend, was this guy I talked to once before in Ocala. And I figured since I'd talked to him before and he was wearing an orange vest, he was the right guy to give me advice about my life and which direction I should move forward. So it seemed like, you know, this was my connection. He was going to set me straight. So I said, you know, I'm not really getting any play here. I know I don't belong here, but I don't know what to do or where to go. And he said, well, you need to move to like Orlando or Gainesville or something. And I thought, well, I don't know. Tell me about both, because I know, I mean, I've been to Orlando and I knew it was just, I didn't want to be a small fish in that big pond. And I found out that Gainesville was closer. So I thought, well, I'm just going to go to Gainesville because I don't know what else to do. So I got in my car and I drove into Gainesville, and I walked in off the street to the Sequential Artist Workshop, which is on South Main and 5th. And I just walked in with my portfolio, and the owner of the Sequential Artist Workshop, they teach comics there, Tom Hart and Leela Corman were both sitting there. They just happened to be there. And as Tom tells it, this crazy barefoot woman comes in with her portfolio and wants work. And what I want to say is, well, I'm sorry, but we're really small. We don't have anything for you, blah, 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 blah. So, you know, he was ready to give me the blow-off speech. And then he opened my portfolio. And this isn't boasting. It's true. My art kicks ass. And Tom recognized this immediately. And I told Tom my whole story about the crazy people I lived with, the deflating inflatable bed, the fact that I only had 4 weeks worth of money left, and then I was totally screwed, nowhere to live, nowhere to go. And Tom said, we need to get some money in your envelopes. So we're going to get a class running for you in the next 2 weeks. So he got a class running for me. He came to the first class. And then that night when I came home, there was a message inside my email box that said, I am begging you to join my school and stay on for the year long and be one of my core teachers. So suddenly I now had a job, I had a friend in Gainesville, and I had an escape route. The problem was the people in Ocala I had to live with until she came down. I was stuck in this horrible house, and I had this job opportunity in Gainesville. And I thought, you know, how am I going to manage, you know, this situation other than to just leave, because they've been treating me like heck anyway. So I had pretty much kind of given up any hope of being able to think my way through it. So I depended on my faith in Hinduism, which I'm also a Hindu by choice, not by birth. And I bought this Ganesh statue that I noticed was broken. And if you don't know who Ganesh is the remover of obstacles in the Hindu tradition. And I noticed that my Ganesh statue was slightly broken. And I thought, well, you know, I guess I'll take it back tomorrow or the next day. So I got ready to take it back. And the very day before I was going to take it back, the guy in the house said, good news, we sold our house, you can go. So that huge obstacle was removed just like that. I was told Joe Corder had a room out by the lake, Lake Noonan. And I went out there and I looked at it and I thought, oh my God, you know, what am I in for? Because it was windows, floor to ceiling, with no curtains. And I felt like I was in a fishbowl. And there was nothing in the room but a mattress in the middle of the floor. And I was kind of nervous at first, you know, like, you know, what is this going to be all about, you know? And I ended up taking the room because Joe gave me a deep discount rate. Thanks, Joe. So that's how I ended up working in Gainesville, living in Gainesville, and getting my envelopes stuffed full of money again. Thanks. I guess the moral of the story is, sometimes you can't think your way through it. You just have to take the leap of faith and hope for the best.
Thanks, Justine. I think I've heard parts of that story before, and I still got goosebumps. Would anyone else like to share a story about why they live where they live? You've got a story? I think everyone else would much rather hear your story than see me standing here awkwardly as I try and peer around the corner.
So, first time at Conk, long time appreciator, first time presenter. I'm a big Gainesville fan to the point where I'm mocked about it, as probably a lot of people in this room are, questioned about why I love living here. And I'm going to tell a little bit of a different story. Some other people have told why they decided to stay, and I'm going to actually kind of flip it and go to the essence of why I'm here, which is one of my first years here, which was back like 97, 98, I was biking down the street. I was coming from campus. I was still in graduate school, and I was biking, probably lived in the duck pond. And approaching me was someone else on a bike, coming right toward me with a huge stick carrying. I mean, it was absurdly long, maybe 6 feet, just a big piece of wood coming right toward me. And I saw him approaching, and he kept coming closer and closer and not acknowledging me, but right as he came to me and passed me, right as he passed by me, he just said, "Joust." And I cracked up. And as I went by him, I just, you know, started laughing out loud. And for the rest of my ride home, I was laughing out loud. And I said, and I consciously said, this is why I love Gainesville. This is why I live here. Someone I didn't know was just out in the community amusing me. And I never knew who he was. I never saw him again, or if I didn't know it. And I just love that about Gainesville. And I feel like that happens so much. I feel like people do that to me on such a consistent basis that it blows away any other place I've ever lived. So that's why I live here.
Thanks. I was mid-bite, sorry. So, anyone else? Why do you live where you live? Come on up.
Hi, everyone. This is my very first ever performance on talking into the microphone. Hi, my name is Marko Suvejic, and I am relatively new to Gainesville, and I like it for a couple of reasons. One is people of Gainesville, and some of them, like Kathy, who just talked to us, are so passionate about Gainesville that this helped me discover what Gainesville is about when I came here. I came here on a relatively random note. I teach at University of Florida, and I had nothing to do with Gainesville initially. It was just University of Florida. And the second part is that, so I'm a Trekkie, like a Star Trek fan. And at one point in time, I realized that being part of University of Florida reminded me immensely of being on a Starship Enterprise. And as funny as that sounds, it really kind of ended up being like that. It's a highly ordered system where we have different ranks, and I have my little UF card that I can access different things, and I cannot access some other things based on my rank. And I work for the Research Institute, where we boldly go and research where no one else has researched before. And I work with people from Korea, New York, Serbia, Italy, Greece. It's like different races who come together and research together. So at one point in time, I really realized, I mean, I for a long time, I kept claiming that if we ever have a station on Moon or a Mars, I'll volunteer to go. It was the second best to going on the spaceship, right? So UF kind of provided me that experience of, hey, let's do this. Let's boldly go where no one else has been. And then Gainesville kind of came along with that. And I came from a big city. I never lived in a city with less than a few million people. And But however, Gainesville was different. It worked on me really slowly. And now I kept discovering that all of a sudden it's a, this conglomerate of very interesting, amazing people who are into their own things. And when I say own things, it can be biology or it can be raising horses. So I started riding horses here. For the first time ever, I actually live in a place where there is room to ride horses. And for the last 20 years, I lived where, you know, concrete 30 miles around where I'm in. So here I am for a year. You know, I've been in Gainesville for 1 year, traveling this spaceship called UF, and really enjoying people like you and hanging out at Satchel's and hearing all these cool stories of why people really want to be here. And that's kind of awesome. Thank you.
Thanks so much. I found that a refreshing, refreshing take on the university. So thank you. So why I live where I live? More stories about why you live in Gainesville, or maybe even why you lived somewhere else.
Hi, I'm Samantha. Thanks. I get really nervous talking in front of people, and so this is like a challenge for me. Because I'm not holding a guitar or like doing some yoga stuff. I'm just standing here. And I was thinking about why I live here. And I live here because it's beautiful and my life is easy, but that doesn't make a good story. So I wanted to tell you a couple of funny things that happened to me while I was living here. And one thing is that I've been here for a long time. And there was a really special place here called the Hardback. And who knows the Hardback? Okay, I'm in the right place, all right. So I worked there from 19 until 25, I guess. And it was this really culturally rich place. Anyone could play there, their first show, or like a touring band would come. And it was really cool. And it was my life. I worked there every day, and I cleaned the place, and I tended bar, and I worked the door. So River Phoenix was this guy in Gainesville, right? And he died, and that was sad. And lots of people came for his wake at the Hippodrome, which is right next to the Hardback, which is where Boca Fiesta is now. So imagine that the restaurant is the bar and that the courtyard is the courtyard, and the backspace is just wild space with broken glass and a basketball court. And so River Phoenix, he's this big dude, you know, and there are lots of famous people around. And I'm with my friend Matt from out of town, and we're both underage. And he's like, well, where can we get a beer? And I'm like, we can get a beer at the Hardback, because that's where I work, and that's what we do there. So we walk in the front door, and we're like talking to the door guy, and Matt's like, Samantha. And I was like, what? He's like, at the bar, that's Dan Aykroyd. And I was like, oh, that does look like Dan Aykroyd. And I yelled, hey, Dan! And he turned around and looked at me, and I looked at him, and I was like, oh, my God. And so I ducked over to the patio really fast, and I was like, oh, Dan Aykroyd. So he followed us out there. And me and my 19-year-old friend are just like, oh my, this guy's like a Ghostbuster, you know? And he walks out with this big Dan Aykroyd voice, and he says, hey, is it okay to burn one out here? And I'm like, yeah, Dan Aykroyd, it's totally okay to burn one out here. And Dan Aykroyd like produces this enormous rolled cigarette and shares it with me and my friend, and said, you know, asked us how to get to Denny's, and I was like, I want to go to Denny's too. And he's like, that's cool. And then he left. That was my story. That was my Hardback story. And I had a series of hilarious stories to share with you, and that was the first. Maybe I'm drawing a blank on the second. I don't know. But anyway, let me think. Because I have two more. Is that okay? They're very silly. Okay. Okay, so I'll just go on with the brush with fame things since I'm kind of on that tip. So there was this restaurant in Gainesville called Skeeter's Big Biscuits. They had big biscuits, like their biscuits were the size of a plate. Yeah, and they were open 24 hours. So me and my existential friend who liked to chain smoke and drink black coffee all night, we would go because we were teenagers and that's what you do. When you're teenagers, you stay up all night. So we would go and stay up all night and drinking lots of black coffee, eating big biscuits, and like I'm getting up to pee. And every time I walk by this table, this guy says, I'm wearing these like red velvet pants because I'm very gothic and they're tights and I have boots on. And every time I walk past this table, this guy says, Robin Hood, riding through the land. And I'm like, okay. So, you know, I'm drinking lots of black coffee and I'm peeing a lot and their table is in front of the bathroom and I keep walking by and he keeps singing, Robin Hood, riding through the land. And I'm like, oh my God. So I go back and I sit down. I'm like, Paula, this guy's like a creep. Like he keeps singing to me every time I walk past his table. And she looks over and she's like, Samantha. And I'm like, what? She's like, that's Joaquin Phoenix. And I was like, who the fuck is that? I don't know. And I've never seen a movie in my life except for Ghostbusters. So she's like, well, you have to go talk to him. And I was like, I don't want to go talk to him. She's like, well, go talk to him for me. And I said, okay. So I went and talked to them, and he was like, come to this party with me. And I was like, okay, right, we'll go to this party for my friend because she likes you. So we go to this party, and we're all hanging out, and I'm not going to tell the rest of the story, actually, because it gets really bad. But anyway, the Robin Hood part was really funny. And then things got really bad. I have never talked to that guy again. But, okay. So another story, and I'm going to wrap it up by coming back to the hardback, was friends and I were like walking the streets at night like we do when we're 19 and 20 years old, and my friends are drinking this beer. We're like walking down the street like it's New Orleans or something, but it's not, it's Gainesville. And so I'm like, hey, give me a sip of that beer. And they give me the beer can, and it's empty. So I just am like, I toss it down. I'm like, thanks, guys. And right as I toss it down, this police car is driving by. And I turn around, and I see that he's put on his brakes. He saw me holding the can. And I start to run. I just run as fast as I can, two or three blocks. And then I hear footsteps behind me, and I'm like, fuck. So I run a little faster, and I go to the hardback, and I duck in the fence, and I hide under a bench, and my heart's beating really fast, and I'm like, oh, man, I know that was the cop. And so sure enough, I'm under the bench, and I see these boots there, and I'm, like, wondering, well, he sees me, and he's like, hey, and I'm like, hey, and he's like, what are you doing? And I said, I'm hiding from you. And he's like, okay, well, why? And I said, well, I don't want you to arrest me or hurt me. And he's like, well, okay, why'd you throw the beer can? I was like, well, it was empty. He's like, well, you need to go pick it up. And I said, okay, I'll do that. And so I go and pick it up, and I'm just holding the beer can, and the cop and me, and I'm just little. And my friends are gone, and he's like, I don't know why he just lets me off the hook. He's like, you need to like throw away the beer can. I was like, okay, but now I'm like all by myself and my friends are gone. They split when they saw you. And so now I'm stuck here without a ride. And he's like, all right, well, get in the back of the car and I'll give you a ride home. And that was my night.
Thanks, Samantha. I don't know if anyone's ever gotten just a ride home that easy. You've got a story? Come on.
I didn't think about talk here tonight. I'm totally 100% introvert, and I'm not English speaker. And my name is Kano Hendel. I'm from Japan, originally. I'm living in Gainesville 11 years. But something moved me today, and I needed to talk. I'm gonna cry. Okay, I'm from Japan. I have to start to speak about World War II. And when I was 7 years old, my mother talked about Vietnam War. Everybody, if you don't understand, just raise your hand. I'm going to say that word again. Okay? It's echoing. And I was 7 years old, and my mother was talking about Beatles are breaking up, and then Vietnam War. Like that age. And I couldn't believe there's war in the world, because my mother grew up in Tokyo and lived in Tokyo, and so she talked to me all the Tokyo bomb. She was not in the Hiroshima or Nagasaki, so she didn't experiment that big atomic bomb, but she talked about how horrible was the bomb. So after the World War II is done, gone, I saw there was no war in the whole world, it's peace. And my mother was telling about Vietnam War. I couldn't believe there's war in the world still. I still remember that. Then years passed. I met my husband, he's American person. I moved to America, and I hated to speak English, and I couldn't speak very well. But I live in, first place, I live in Columbia, South Carolina. I grew up in Tokyo. It was very culture shock. It's like kind of New York to Columbia, South Carolina. That was fine. And then we moved to East Tennessee called Morristown, Tennessee, little 45 miles away from Knoxville. It's very little tiny town. I say village, but my husband says city. But it's a little tiny town. And then I was teaching elementary school to middle school art class. I'm a painter. And then it was 9/11. The America got attacked. I was in the school that happened when the World Trade Center building got hit. Tomorrow is anniversary, right? That's why the community. But I was in the school, and then little kids started crying. I don't know what's going on. And then we just hold circle on the hand, and then just let's close our eyes. And so we came home. And then I always anti-war. I'm not so strong positive activist, but I always anti-war through my painting. And in the Morristown, after the 9/11 happened, it's very, very go attack enemy attitude all around me. Maybe only my husband was. We are very black sheep in the Morristown, Tennessee. And then all my neighborhood put a sign for God Bless America sign. God Bless America everywhere. And I didn't know when I was in Tokyo, in Japan, that America's image is only New York or Los Angeles. And I didn't know the image of God Bless America image. I didn't know. And wow, this is America in Morristown, Tennessee. God bless America? How about me? Like, I saw God bless everybody, I thought. But I'm not American, so I'm not, maybe God is not blessing me. But anyway, that's another issue. And so I was just like totally like, wow. Then I went to the liquor store and then buying a beer or something. And then there was Osama bin Laden's picture, and then big, big, huge, what's the American symbol bar? Eagle. Eagle is eating Osama bin Laden's head. Like, wow! Like, just like a really shocking image for me. Then Randy had friends, my husband Randy had friends living in Gainesville. We happened to visit Randy's sister in Panama City, and we dropped by Dave and Rebecca's house. And then when we dropped by the Gainesville, just only that reason, one night we stayed in the Gainesville, we still in Morristown, Tennessee. I saw the sign everywhere in the Gainesville says, war is not the answer. And oh my gosh, is this America too? That was really, really, really opened my heart. I was totally closed before. And then some reason, Randy got position open at the Santa Fe. And when he hear that, I thought, yes, let's move to Gainesville. That's what we are here now.
Thank you so much. So, why I live where I live? Or why you live where you live? Come on up.
Okay. Hi, everybody. My name is Brian Monkey Soul Stanton. And I'm originally from California, a coastal town in Los Angeles, and essentially Los Angeles. And I ended up in Florida because my dad passed away while we were actually visiting, which is now my stepdad. We went to like Disney and all that stuff, and he passed away out in California, and I got stuck here. I never got to go back. So I ended up going to middle school, high school, and college here. And, you know, in 1990, like, people are like, oh, yeah, Ocala, without even ever going there, like, knowing what's there. But, I mean, it's not like, you know, it's not New York or anything. But, I mean, in 1990, it was a totally different animal. And moving from L.A., there was a very stark difference. Especially for someone who is, like, their family is Jewish, and coming from Los Angeles, where you're like, can just be normal, and it's like very multicultural. Like, I barely had any white friends, and then, like, I hear about the Klan marching downtown, and like, just seeing rebel flags everywhere, and you know, my mom, we had a store, like, my mom is like really openly Jewish, and you know, unless we like talk about it, you know, because we're like, I have her features as far as like hair color and eyes. And so she's like really light skin. So anyway, she would just like say it, and like people started like leaving black roses. Like people tried to burn her house down several times. Like they would burn crosses. And this was like even in like a primarily African American neighborhood, this even happened. So I mean, it's just like total culture shock. It was weird. And I went to an urban school and I stuck it out or whatever. And like I always felt like I always like maintained this element of California inside me, and I always like kind of felt like out of place or different, and you know, like I don't know. And then when I went to college down there, it really started to open me up as far as like exposure again to other cultures, other people, and I was like so like refreshed, you know, because I had like people who like had higher levels of thought, and you know, there was like a lot more like intercultural diversity. And so It was great. And like while I was like in my second year, I got a really old crappy motorcycle, and I used to drive up to Gainesville actually like three times a week, because I ended up getting really roped in. This was like around 99, and it was like the Shamrock and the CMC. Ooh, Shamrock. And I'm part Irish too, that's my name. And so they used to have all like so much like activism stuff and like the poetry jam and the open jams at the Shamrock and the original Common Grounds, which is now 1982. And like the thing about Ocala is like there was always like this thriving music scene, like it was really tight, but we never had a venue. Like it was always like just there'd be like one venue and then they got shut down or for one reason or another. And I actually helped start and run a venue. Well, I didn't start it, I kind of kept it going. But I started like this whole like nonprofit kind of thing there. And anyways, that's a kind of like flashback for a second, and like kind of springboarded my career. But like I always had this like involvement since I was like 11 in the music scene. So when I came up here, I saw like how different it was, and how it was like, especially back then, like it was like really, really strong, and they had like Moon Magazine. You were you the editor, Bill? Are you involved with it? I thought you were. Okay, all right. So, well, anyway, there was like just a lot of action up here, and a lot of like cultural diversity and passion, and it like really strongly influenced me to move up here, even though I had a job offer to make like 75 to 100 grand building cell phone towers when they were kind of first really picking up. And my heart was like all on the scene and like community and like all this stuff. So I actually kind of foregoed or whatever. Like I turned down this like really lucrative kind of job, which I always could have worked for a year and come back. But whatever, I stuck with it. And but yeah, I used to have this like Jimmy at the CMC will tell you that how dedicated I was to and how much like the poetry jams and a lot of the scene meant to me is like I had this really rickety old crappy motorcycle that was broken like 80 to 90% of the time. And I was like so poor, I couldn't afford like this like $5 and $10 part. It sounds like, oh yeah, right, but like it really was ridiculous. I was ridiculously poor. And I would like had to push start this motorcycle. And I'm like not very big, you know, and it would stall out. And I like trouble starting, it would like stall out, and I would just run with this thing and try and jump on it, and but I would still stay till like 4 and 5 in the morning, especially when things were as restricted. But and right before I moved up too, I got really like kind of involved with breakdancing, and I had always heard that there was a lot of that going on in Gainesville, and that's when the Hip Hop Collective was kind of just starting, and I got really involved with that, kind of like forming the group. And now it's like 14 years running. We have this big, actually two big annual events where people come from all over the country and all over the state, and like it's just like we're really like I got there's so many like diverse experiences and got to like meet so many like just people that end up being something or just you didn't really know who they were at the time. And like we get all these shows that normally only go to like Orlando and Miami and maybe like Jacksonville and stuff. Like we're really fortunate. And I moved away for like 5 years until a couple years ago. And you know, there's pros and cons to everywhere you live, but you know, I always wanted to move back, and I was really glad to see like so much sustainability stuff. I helped found Edible Plant Project was one of the things that kept me going here too. And just seeing like how people are like embracing sustainability and how there's actually some jobs here to keep people here. And though some of the support for the music scene has waned a little bit, it's nice to see places like the Jam and Satchel's expanded and just, you know, the CMC grown. And so it's like, and everywhere I go, I seem to run into somebody I know. It's not like the same people all the time too. So it's not like a small town where you're like, it's like same, you know, it's like you don't really feel alone when you go somewhere, you know, like you could just go out and not make plans and actually run into somebody, you know, or even meet somebody, because people here, like, just, I don't know, I feel like are pretty open to meeting new people. And it's like the only place I've ever been where you can have like all kinds of crazy political and scientific discussions at a keg party, you know, so, or at a bar. So, So I'm just glad to be back, and that's why I moved back to Gainesville. So thanks.
Thanks, Brian. So more of Where I Live, Where I Live. All right.
That light's right for you. Hi, I'm Fred. I think my story about in Gainesville is similar to a lot of people's. I came here for graduate school in the late, I guess it was just 90, 91. It was a long time ago. And I came here and I went to my grad classes. I bartended. I played music. And it took me 7 years to finish a 2-year degree. I finally left, and I decided while I was here that I actually didn't want to pursue really what I wanted to do. I started cooking down here when I moved here, and I started and I actually worked with a catering company down here, and I ended up cooking at one of the worst fancy restaurants in Gainesville. It was Casa Palermo. It was a very, very bad fancy restaurant. And when I waited tables there, I had to wear the tuxedo shirt and the black jacket and all that. And I knew that that wasn't what cooking was about, and I'd already done some cooking before. And I decided to pursue my career elsewhere, and I ended up in New York City. And I was there for a long time and ended up in Europe. And I worked there as well. But what makes my story similar is I came back. And so many people have gone away and come back to Gainesville. You know, people... You know, they graduate college, like, I'm going to get out of here, I'm going to make my way, and they often do. But many do make their way and come back, and others don't make their way and come back. But the same holds true for both of those sort of groups, is that you come back here and it's comfortable. Some people say Gainesville is the velvet rut of the womb of booze or something of that nature. I mean, people, you know, because of it's so comfortable here and easy to live and... you know, my experience, and I lived in that for a while when I was younger, but coming back, I appreciated that I could still have the kind of conversations I could have here that I had in New York City. And one of the reasons why I left Florida to begin with, as an undergrad in Syracuse, was I was, you know, a Jew from Northeastern parents living in Jacksonville, Florida, growing up there. And I never quite felt right there. I was like, what is wrong with me? Why does no one get my jokes? And then I saw Mel Brooks movies and I figured it out. But anyway, I think there's a couple of my friends have left recently, and a couple of my best friends, people that I met here 20 years ago, and I came back and they're my good friends again then. And they're still my very good friends, and they've moved away. And, you know, I'm sad, and I'm, like, pissed off. But, you know, I feel like, you know, like, for me, when I came back here, and I sort of fell right back into it, but in a different place and growing in a different direction, that, you know, those people will probably do the same thing. And I, you know, I'm happy that they're off pursuing other things, but I look forward to them coming back. And they probably will. Anyway, that's what I got to say.
Thanks, Fred. So the next conch, I'll have to check the date, but it's always the second Tuesday of every month, and our next theme will be on tour. So take that as you will, but any kind of tour, stories of tour. So, but tonight, Why I Live Where I Live. So, would anyone else like to share a tidbit? All right.
I don't like crowds. My name is Stick. It's a verb as opposed to a noun. Action, present tense. Thank you for the compliment before. I just got back from finishing the Appalachian Trail, which, no, if anyone doesn't know, it's 85.9 miles from Springer Mountain, Georgia, to Katahdin, Maine. That's a northern terminus. And I walked every step. So I'm pretty proud of that right now. Rarely do I toot my own horn. Well, unless you know me. I call it self-defecating when you crap on yourself. But anyway. Gainesville. Could be how I ended up here, I can describe it in one word. A fluke. Good night. Okay, true story. This is going to come out like a Tarantino movie. I'm here now, although I don't live here now. I tell people I'm by metro because I actually live in Gainesville and Atlanta, so two metropolitans. How did I end up here to begin with? I had dreams as a kid of being an athlete, and I wanted to be the greatest athlete. Ray Charles said it best. I never wanted to be famous. I just wanted to be the best. And with being the best comes attention and things like that. So I was heavily recruited in high school for track and field. And back in the day of no internet, no, you know, mass communication, it was telephone or mail. So I would get 20 letters a day from Amherst, University of Texas, USC, USC, you name it, including University of Florida. My coach's name was John Randolph. He was legendary, blah, 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 but I knew nothing about the South. I grew up in New Jersey, and I knew nothing about anything in the SEC and what have you. But, you know, one of the greatest coaches ever showed up at my house, at my school, and blah, blah, blah. Short story long, he started recruiting all the best runners in the country, and I became one of 16 of the best athletes recruited in 1980. That was my graduating class. But how I got here, I couldn't make a decision. Could not make a decision to save my life, and my dream became my nightmare. As a kid, I dreamed of being the starting shortstop for the New York Yankees, for instance. So Derek Jeter has my job. I hate him. in fact, I got my nickname because of a New York Yankees shortstop. So sports was my life, but sometimes your dream can become your nightmare. And it became, I mean, I had an ulcer at 17 from the pressure of, you know, walking the path. The path was always clear. Just walk down it and you'll be on the medal stand of the Olympics one day. But that became a horrific hell ride when I came to Gainesville. I hated it here. I grew up in New Jersey. I could go 26 miles and be in New York City and see any show I wanted, any art I wanted. And I came to this little town in 1980 and there was nothing. I mean, the only thing that was attractive was the people that came here because of the university. Met some of the best friends I've ever had in my life. This was, 34 years ago now? These people I'm still associating with now. I have come back because of the track team, ironically, because of reunions. And 4 years ago, I came back to a reunion, and I sat in the Wrights Union and looked over the green, beautiful landscape of Gainesville and said, yeah, I could live here again. And a seed was replanted. It was more positive than my initial introduction to this town, although I could go out and ride my bike for 30 miles, 50 miles, beaches, you know, flora, fauna, you name it. I mean, Florida's gorgeous, but socially, it was empty for me. So I had to do a little bit of, you know, traveling, I suppose. But the friends from 30 years ago and who was friends with my pleasant, lovely lady, Sherilyn, ironically, I don't have to pass a test for her because her friends are my friends. She's been here 20 years and her friends are my friends from 30 years ago. So, hey, whatever. It's easy. So I call them commas. And I said, well, she was the final comma maybe to bringing me back here. My stuff isn't physically here yet, but my heart is here. Part of me has always been here. I feel like, you know, as climbing Katahdin, the climb is worth it. It's a struggle. I hope no one pinches me because I do not want this dream to be over. Welcome me back.
Welcome back, Stick. Good to have you.
Hi there, I'm Sasha. I wasn't actually going to speak tonight, but it's interesting. Everybody's talking a lot about Gainesville, but when I heard that this was the theme for tonight, I really thought about origin as a broader thing. I think of my origin story as Gainesville in a lot of different ways because I've chosen to come here three different times, but I thought tonight a lot about my origin of coming to America. You can't tell it by looking at me or listening to me, but I was born in South Africa, third generation. And back in 1982, 5 years before I was born, my parents decided to determine my origin, both by having me in South Africa, but also at that time applying for a green card here in America. It didn't come until 5 years later, actually on the day I was born. The day I was born, my dad went home after he left the hospital, as dads were more prone to come and go in those times, and he found in the mailbox sitting there this incredible piece of news that they were accepted to come to America, something that they had hoped and dreamed for their family that at the time in 1982 was just a twinkle in my mom's eyes, that they really finally were able to do that. And so 6 months later, they bundled me up as soon as they could, and they brought me to America, actually to Florida. So I've been a Floridian since then, and as my parents like to say, have a Floridian accent. So oranges or not, I say things a little differently than them. But it's been really wonderful to have that option chosen for me, to really have that background and that appreciation for what they did for me and for what they did for my sister as well and our family, and to be able to come to America and really know why my parents chose to leave a certain place and to broaden our horizons in a lot of ways really gives a lot of coloring to what I try to bring to every day. I really appreciate what my parents did for me, but I also really recognize how much everybody has an origin story you might not realize just because you don't hear an accent or you don't see a birth certificate. So I always think it's really great to have these kinds of conversations, and I really appreciate hearing everybody's stuff, so I hope you enjoyed hearing a little bit of mine. Thanks.
Thanks so much. So anymore, why I live where I live. Come on up.
Being in front of people. Lee, my name's Lee. I came here, I came here, my truck broke down. I had just broke up with my girlfriend in Key West. Had 15 cents, made it up to Gainesville by hitchhikers pitching into the gas. Truck broke down on University. And then I ended up going to the university eventually. I got jobs at a bunch of different places, but ended up at the university, going to the university, started going to Central America, went away for 30 years, and I just got back. So, in those 30 years, I was covering wars and revolutions all over the world. And I was always a foreigner everywhere I went. Lived 15 years in Eastern Europe, was in South America under Pinochet and under Shining Path in Peru and then Guatemala during their war. And I'm always a foreigner. And then after I got divorced in the Eastern Europe, I was living on a sailboat and still being a foreigner in the Caribbean and different islands everywhere. And then I said, it's time not to be a foreigner anywhere. And I never really lived anywhere in my life, because even before I broke down in Gainesville, I was hitchhiking around the country since I was 13. And so I was always a foreigner everywhere I went my whole life. But this was the closest thing I called a home when back in, because I went to school here. And so a year ago, I sold a boat, got some extra money, and bought a house here. Son moved in from Eastern Europe, and he's living with me and going to the college now, too. And that's how I got to Gainesville.
And another welcome back story. Joe? Yeah. All right.
All right, I'm Joe, and I'm kind of the counterpoint to Lee. I was probably living in town when Lee came to town in 1975 is when I got here, 76. I haven't left, but I've seen a lot of Gainesville go on, and why I live here is because I'm totally habituated and embedded in this community. I love this town. I love what this town has done for me. There's just so an undercurrent of counterculture that lives in this town that I was able to fall right into when I came to town. There's a really strong feminist movement. There was a really strong anti-war movement, and also a lot of musicians playing acoustic music, and I even found some that play volleyball every Sunday, and I still do that. 30 years, over 30 years of that. But I came to town on a fluke. Somebody else mentioned a fluke. It all goes back to picking up a hitchhiker in Colorado one day. I'd gone down, I wanted to live somewhere other than Michigan where I went to college, and I was living in Boulder for a brief time. I didn't like that. I went to Golden, Colorado, right south of there, and I picked up a guy hitchhiking because I was killing time because the town's newspaper wasn't out yet. It was a Thursday weekly paper. And in picking up this guy and giving him a ride, he told me about a job site there. At the time, I had my hair all grown out. This is counterculture. This is 1974. And he told me, hey, they hire long hairs there. You might try to get a job there. So I went by the job site. They said you can start on Monday. And I am so glad that I had the presence of mind that, because I'd given that guy a ride home, cause since I was killing Tom, I knew where he lived. I drove back to his house and we kind of shared a ceremonial smoke, and I thanked him for having put me onto this job. And it was on that job site that I met somebody who moved to Gainesville and that led me to move to Gainesville. And through that, once I got to town, then I got connected up with all the good stuff here. How I live where I actually live, Justine alluded earlier to the lake house out by Noonan's Lake. I met a young woman who was a student at the University of Florida at the time. I was actually heading out to see my old friends out. They were playing music out at Casey's Cafe out in Archer, which I don't know if Casey's is still there or not. I don't get to that side of town much. But I got all the way out to the I-75 overpass on Archer Road, and I thought, you know, I picked up this flyer on campus for a party, and I could go there and meet new people rather than going out there. So I turned the car around, and I met my partner Jenny Brown there, and we met and hit it off just incredibly well. And we're life partners, have been together since 1984. This September, we'll have 30 years together, 20 years married, and it's really cool. So I love that part of Gainesville. But there's so much I've seen in town that's part of me and made me who I am, but also makes me feel good about who I am because I'm part of all the stuff here. And I'm just going to run through a couple vignettes that I love about Gainesville. This first one's a little dark and maybe a little rough, but I can't resist telling it, especially now. We've had this thing on campus just recently where some asshole has assaulted four women. Well, in 1990, we had a situation where we had the Gainesville murders. We had a guy actually killing people. And at that time, there was resistance to all the satellite trucks that came to town. The media from all over the country was talking about the Gainesville murders, the Gainesville murders, the Gainesville murders. We got annoyed with all those satellite trucks. And I remember a bunch of feminists and anti-violence people got together, and we had a rally at the downtown plaza with about 100 people speaking out against violence. And no media covered it, because the media wanna cover it as a spin, as a, oh, victims, Gainesville are victims. But people organized around that, and people resisted. That is really captured in a story that I witnessed And to me, it's a legendary, whoever this person is in Gainesville, they got their number one in my book as far as taking action. Phil Donahue, famous talk show host, came to Gainesville. He wanted to do a story about the student murders. He came and did a show at the Downtown Plaza in Gainesville. At the time, the Downtown Plaza actually had a broken down fountain in the middle of it. They filled it up with sod or dirt, put sod on the top of it. So everybody, I mean, there was probably 1,500 people there. And here's Phil. He had bragged he was going to have the mayor and this college president there, and none of those people wanted to go on his show. So he ended up with one city commissioner, one representative from student government, a family member. But we all were pretty burned out on being exploited by the national media. 10 minutes into his show, I happened to be up on the landing right near the truck where the electronics were. And all of a sudden, this guy comes bolting out the side of this truck. He runs around the backside, comes back around, talks, says something to a cop. Cop walks out in the street, looks both ways, and goes like this. Somebody on a bicycle had come by with a machete or an axe and got 4 of the 5 camera cables while Phil Donahue was live on the air. They almost took the whole show off. Phil had to do the whole show with just one. That person captured the fight back spirit of Gainesville. That Gainesville, it's a peaceful town. It's a lot of art and community. But we also know how to get our back up, and we know what's right. And I'm so glad you pointed out those signs that we had during the war, because this town has that heart. Every Memorial Day, Veterans for Peace puts up the Memorial Mile out there, marking all the dead from that war. That's an amazing community effort. 40 people at midnight till 6 a.m. working, putting those up, putting them down. So why I live here isn't just what I experience here, it's what the town is and what we all get to experience. Newcomers love it. Old people, you know what it's about. Thank you.
Thanks, Joe. Would anyone else like to share why they live where they live? Me? Because my parents moved me here when I was an angsty teenager and I just stayed. Turns out I like it. Huh? Yeah. I didn't like it then, of course, because they tore me away from all of my friends, but as I stay here longer and longer, it grows on me. So much that now I live here by choice. Rick?
I thought I would bring this back to the person who came up with the theme tonight, which is Harry Cruz, in his essay, Why I Live Where I Live. I moved back to Gainesville in 2002. And shortly after that, I became friends with Harry. And at the time, all my grandparents had all passed away. So in a lot of ways, he became sort of like a grandfather to me. Now, for those of you that knew Harry, he could never really be a grandfather because he had just too much fire and passion in him to really succumb to that sort of elderly statesman, wise man role. But in any case, we started having regular conversations about Gainesville, and he'd already written that essay at that point, and I'd read it, and I talked to him about it, and it really struck me how much he thought about where people come from and the importance of the environment. In my work, I actually study humans and the environment, and a lot of times that means sort of the green stuff out there, but there's also a lot more of that, and that's the social environment that we all have. And Harry had thought a lot about that and how that informed his own work and how he struggled for a long time to write until he really was able to bring back who he was. And rather than be, obscure his origins, growing up poor as a sharecropper and a really, beyond awful upbringing, Some of that he wrote about, some of that he wrote about, and it never got published. And you know, maybe one day that tale will come out. But you know, he had a life growing up that was really just horrific in some ways. But he was able to take that and turn it into his work, and he brought that to Gainesville. And you know, you can read the essay to really get at where he was coming from. But he understood that who we are is from where we are, and also who we interact with, and our social environment, and being around people. Lost my train of thought briefly, but any case, he's no longer with us, but he's one of those people in Gainesville that really makes Gainesville what it is today. And in you know, the last several years, we've lost a lot of those people. It's nice to see so many people coming back to Gainesville, because you are those people as well, and you'll be those people later on, and kind of keep the spirit alive here. So keep Gainesville going. Thank you.
Thanks, Rick. So we've probably got about time for one more, if anyone would like to wrap it up. Why I Live Where I Live. Right?
So I moved here probably, I don't even remember. It was probably around 8 years ago. And I came here with somebody else who got a job here. And I didn't know that much about Gainesville. I had seen a picture of the springs, and I decided that'd be okay with me. I moved around a lot, so, you know, I know that if you move someplace, you can always leave. So it didn't really scare me to move to a place that I might not like. But I had some, now I know that they were misconceptions about Florida. When I thought of Florida, I thought of trailer homes and tornadoes, which is a little strange because there aren't really tornadoes here, and old people. I just imagined like parking lots. Like, just imagine, like, a Walmart parking lot full of trailers and old people. That's what I thought Florida was. So I moved here, and I was pretty quickly introduced to the Lachua Trail. I don't know if you guys are familiar, but it's on the southwest part of town, and it's this really beautiful trail out into the prairie. And I'm not sure when. It was a couple of years before I moved here, or the year before I moved here, that there had been a lot of rain, and then the water had receded, and there was tons of gators. And there's still a lot of gators out there, but the year that I moved here, I mean, it was ridiculous. And I had no idea that it wasn't like that all the time. So the first time I went out there, I was like, oh my God, what the hell? You know, you'd be walking down the trail, and there'd be a gator, and then you'd be a gator, and you'd like be walking over gators, and there's gators everywhere. And I was like, wow, there's a lot of gators here. So I would go out there a lot. That was like kind of my place to be out in nature. I hadn't figured out that there was tons of other places to go that I now enjoy. So I'm out there walking one day, and I'm still, Florida's still sort of a fictional place to me. Even though I was living here, I was just trying to learn how to enjoy it. And I'm walking out there one day, and I walk past this dad with his two daughters. They're little. They're like little munchkins. And there's this big gator laying on the bank. And, you know, the girls are like, huh? Look at the gator. And the dad's like, oh, you guys, just stay away. You stay away. Just stand back, and we'll get a picture. And I'm like, oh, no, no, no. They're like, they won't hurt you. They're, you know, it's Florida. They're gators. It's safe. They're safe. Like, I run over them. And he's like, he looks at me like, what the hell? And I... And I just kept walking, la, la, la. So a couple weeks later, I'm out there at dusk. This is before the signs appeared that have the, you know, like dog equals raccoon equals child pictures out there. I don't know if you've seen them. And anyway, I'm walking back, and this ranger pulls up in her little like golf cart. She's like, "Ma'am, you're gonna have to get in." And I was like, "Well, no, I'm headed back." And she was like, "No, it's time. We're closing up, and this is like when the gators start feeding." I'm like, "Gators feeding?" She's like, "Just get in the cart." So I get in the cart. She's like, "Yeah, you know," she's just kind of rambling as we're driving down the road. She's like, "You know, we might have to, you know, I'm just waiting for the day that we have to close this place down because, you know, a kid's going to get eaten." And I was like, "Oh my God, like I almost fed two children to a gator the other day." And that's when I realized this place is wild. Like, this is not fiction. This is nonfiction. This is a wild place. And I think that's one of my favorite things about Florida. I mean, there's a lot of things I love about Florida, hearing everybody's stories, and there's lots of people sitting at different tables that keep me here, but I really think that's the thing that keeps me here deep down is definitely the wildness in Florida. I love it.
Thanks, Rain. That's about it for tonight. And I feel like I just thought about it momentarily, and it didn't take me that long for why I live where I live. And I feel like it's kind of these things that everyone's touched on, that in Gainesville, it seems like there's a place for everyone and everything. So anything that you want to do or anything that you're into, you can find at least somebody else to join you. And I feel like that's really special. So thank you all this evening for sharing your stories about why you live here and why you stay here. If you'd like to listen to this again, or if you told a story and you would like to share it with your friends, it'll be posted on growradio.org in the next couple days. And our next show will be here, always, on the 14th of October. Had to flip through the mental calendar there. 14th of October here, and the theme will be on tour. So if you know anyone who might have a story, tell them to show up on the 14th, because I think it's going to be epic. Thanks again. Thanks to Satchels, and have a wonderful night. See you next month.